It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Darren Hefty, live from the Morton studio today. Taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd love to talk to you today. Got a lot of stuff going on in agriculture and a lot of stuff going on getting ready for planting coming up next spring. And, you know, you think about, oh boy, it's a long ways off. Yeah, it's a long ways off, especially when it's really cold with this cold blast that we've had this week. It seems like it's quite a ways away, but it's really not. Wow, it's the 1st of February right now. And in 70 days, I hope we're planting on the farm. And 70 days sounds like a lot, but boy, it goes really quick. I know that. I can't believe how fast the first part of this winter has gone for us. We're getting lots of questions in via email, radio@agphd.com. I want to get to some of those email questions here in just a second. You can also find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's dive into the AgPhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, got a question from Michael. And when I say a question, this is one of the things that I find slightly interesting on our show, is that a question may come with 10 pages of soil tests. In this case, it comes with 4 pages of soil tests here, which is totally fine. We love looking at soil tests. If you've got a question on yours, please send it to us. We would love to hear it. And I think sometimes, boy, talking through numbers and chemistry kind of things, I don't know how good a... I don't know if that makes great radio or not, but apparently it must be okay because a lot of farmers are talking about it, and we do see quite a few soil tests coming through each day. Michael farms up in eastern Ontario near Ottawa, and he sent us soil samples before. He said, we've got some fields by the river, a mix of clay. Some have some muck. Some have some lighter sandy loam. They're doing 2 or 3 years of corn and then 1 year of soybeans. And it was... a very good farm average, 210 bushel corn, conventional till, and he goes through the fertilizer program as well. Wondering about side dressing dry potassium and if that could help. The agronomist says the magnesium is way too high and it's going to be really a struggle to correct that. So let's take a look here at some of these soil tests to see what we're talking about. Now, when you send us soil samples, what we'd like to see is complete soil tests. So, for example, we'd like to see what the micronutrients are, and Michael's got his micronutrients included here too. We'd like to see what the cation exchange capacity is to kind of have an idea of how heavy or light that soil is. Now, on average, the soils that Michael sent in are 21 on a CEC. So that we would call a medium to heavy, and we've got some that are up into the low 30s, and we got some that are down as light as 13, 14. So I totally get what you're talking about. You got some clay, you got some muck, and you got some lighter sandy loams. Okay, so looking at some soil tests, Brian, from Ontario. Oh, I had Brian on there for a second, just lost him. And we've got some medium to heavy soils. When you look at our phosphorus, our average reading is about 81 parts per million. And you'd say, wow, that's fantastic. But it's not parts per million, it's pounds per acre on this test. And when you think about that, that does change things. So pounds per acre of phosphorus, you take times 2.3 to get pounds per acre of phosphate. So if we've got roughly 80 pounds times 2.3, we've got 160, 180 pounds roughly of phosphate. So we've got a good deal of phosphate out there for this year's crop. And potassium, we've got 210 pounds, which would be times 1.2, about 240 pounds of K2O potassium. So we're going to need a little bit more potassium as well. And I see what you're talking about. You're trying to build that potassium up, and we've got 1,300 pounds per acre of magnesium and 5,300 pounds per acre of calcium. So one of the things that we like to look at is what is a base saturation on those cations. Now, Michael's saying, the agronomist says, boy, we can't build potassium when we've got that high of magnesium. So his percentage on average of potassium is a 1.9. We'd like to see that at least 4%. And his percentage on magnesium, 17.6, which honestly is not too crazy high, Michael. That's not bad. I would be getting after it as far as building up that K level. trying to find your soil pH here, is about 6.8. So it's not terrible either. So we're kind of set up where we just need to spend a little money on fertilizer, and I think we can do it. You ask about side dressing some dry K. I don't know if I'm big on that. It takes time for dry K sources to break down. For me, I like using a liquid like Sure K, for example. I'll put that right in furrow or in a 2x2. I've had really good luck with that. I get it into the plant. My tissue samples show that it's in there. I've got a lot of guys experimenting with some different liquid Ks in a Y-drop type situation. That could be done as well. For me, I like to get it in there as early as I can because your plants are pulling in K just all throughout the season. So, yeah, this is some ground where that would be priority number one for me, is trying to get that built up. And, boy, I think I'd focus on that before I really focused on anything else. The rest of it doesn't look so bad. You know, when you look at what you've got for micronutrients, we've got a different measurement scale than I'm used to looking at. But you do have readings on zinc, manganese, copper, and boron. That zinc at 4.2 with phosphorus, where that's at, it's about right on. But we like about a 10 to 1 on parts per million. So that'd be about a 20 to 1 on your pounds per acre versus parts per million of zinc. So that's okay. Manganese doesn't look too bad. It really actually, you know, other than you need some boron, I think that K is going to be the next priority. So that's where I would take that one, Michael, is head that direction. Keep working on building up the K, whether it's with manure or compost, or if you want to use commercial fertilizer, you sure could. And I'd feed some K in the root zone with a liquid product like Sure K, either in furrow or in a 2x2. That would be my strategy on those soils. Thanks for the question. We'll dig into some more email questions coming up, and also take some phone calls. Our phone lines will be open all day at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio after this.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Got John on up in North Dakota on the line with us. John, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. I understand you're working on some lime.
Right. We have some low pH soils here that we need to put some lime out on. And I've heard you guys talk about getting your lime source from a water treatment plant.
Yes.
Our local water treatment plant is putting a dewatering system in, but it's going to be coming out about 45% moisture.
Okay.
So I was wondering, do I need special equipment, truck, or especially the spreader, to spread that high moisture lime, or do you guys just stockpile it until it dries some, or how do we handle that?
You know, we do spread it as a sludge, and we don't have the equipment to do that on our farm, so our local source for water treatment plant lime, they've contracted with one person that runs a spreader, and so he'll just haul it to your farm and spread it. The guys that are spreading it on their own are getting either something with vertical beaters, that seems to work pretty well, or some sort of slinger spreader, because it doesn't work through just a regular spinner spreader. It's just too much, like you say, when it's got that much water and it's just not going to work.
Right, that's what I was afraid of. Okay.
But yeah,
will it dry if you stockpile it for a while? Or
That's a great question. We generally haul it out, and sometimes it's a little while before it gets spread, but it's still, I don't think so. I don't think so. Not officially.
Right. Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. The one caution I'd give you, and one thing that we've done is just send in tests just to make sure there aren't any heavy metals in there. And so far our source has been good. Hopefully yours will be too. But I'd just double check and send in a sample for quality just to make sure.
Well, and they tested it and gave me the results. There is a little bit of heavy metal. I don't know what is too much, though. Is there a source that I could check on that?
Yes. The government does have, if you just Google search it, the government's got a limit on what for heavy metals you can put on for pounds.
Okay.
So it's, like I say, there may be a trace of something in there, but if it's 1/100th of what you could put out there, then it's really no big deal.
Right. Okay. Sounds good.
Very good. Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks, Darren. You bet. Have a good day.
Got Kurt with us in Indiana. Kurt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. So what's happening around your farm?
It's starting to warm up here today. Last couple of days, it's been pretty cold.
Yeah, it's to say it's been cold, I'd say record cold. It's been crazy. It hasn't been this cold on our farm. I know I was talking to my dad this morning. He's like, well, I remember that one year. And I'm like, yeah, when we're down to saying, I remember that one time it got worse than that. That's not good. So when you talk about it, did you have problems with anything? Do you have livestock and had some challenges there?
No livestock. The only trouble I had was we was trying to get some diesel, and there was two pumps that froze up. We couldn't get anything, so we ended up running to town and getting some at the truck stop. But other than that, it was pretty quiet around here for a couple of days, just waiting it out.
Are you working on stuff in your shop? Are you working on the planter or anything, or are you making any changes for next spring?
No, just little routine maintenance stuff on a few things. They had a trailer in there working on it, but nothing yet. Kind of taking it easy.
Do you wait till closer to spring on some of that, or what do you normally do with your planter?
That'll probably be around 1st of March. We'll start that.
Yeah, I was talking to a real high yield grower, actually David Hula, and he asked him what he was doing on his planter, and he just laughed, and then he showed me a picture. He had the thing all tore apart, and it's interesting, you know. And I'm sure a guy like Dave gets stuff thrown at him all the time about, hey, try this, hey, try that. But there is a lot of stuff. I mean, have you got into any of the precision planting things or hydraulic downforce or any of that yet?
The corn planter's got the precision planting on it. The 2020, and seen my brother runs that. He seems to be real happy with it. So,
yeah, that's good. Keep the brother happy and keep him out of your hair. That's my general strategy.
Yeah, you got one too, don't you?
Absolutely. Well, Kurt, thanks for calling. Good talking to you, and good luck here going into the spring.
Yep, thank you.
Set up to Saskatchewan. We got Mark with us right now. Mark, what's happening in your area?
Just trying to stay warm, Darren.
I don't blame you for that. I'm sending my brother north of the border next week. What's he going to find when he heads up that way?
Well, you were just the last caller. You guys were just complaining about the temperature. It was minus 40 degrees Celsius here on Tuesday and Wednesday night. You guys have it easy.
You know, that's the thing. And I've been trying to drive this into my kids a little bit. Don't be complaining because somebody's got it worse somewhere. And, yeah, there's no question. You guys can get cold. What have you got for snow cover up there?
It's actually not a lot. A lot of it's actually blown in on the tree line ditches. Typically this time of the year, you can't see the stubble from last year's crop. And you can still see it, and there's a fair bit of concern central and southern Saskatchewan and southern western Canada, period, on dryness. So it's on everybody's mind.
So you'd welcome the snow.
I think a little bit would probably ease some tensions at this point because we did go up into freeze up dry.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because, like, for us, we froze up and we were wet. In fact, lift stations, tile lines, that kind of thing, a lot of guys have said, man, we still had water coming out of the tile lines all through the fall. So I think there were a lot of guys here that were hoping we wouldn't get too terrible much snow, although our snow has been really dry this year. It hasn't been real heavy and wet, so I don't know if we've got much moisture in ours.
Yeah, right. Same here. There were some disappointing yields in southern Saskatchewan and pockets that never got that rain. So, you know, it's either going to have to be snow or that early precipitation in the spring to give us our crop available water requirements, right?
Does it change what you do for crop rotation if you're going into the season dry?
I don't think so. I think we're still planning with average, you know, planning fertility on average precipitation, 30-year average. We're doing a fair bit of work monitoring water with AquaCheck moisture probes and, weather station telematics. And I think, you know, for the most part, all you can do is plan to do average at this point and then start making in-season decisions as that data comes available to you.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, you know, a lot of guys in our part of the world, we're on the extreme edge of the Western Corn Belt, and we're kind of in that area where guys might shift some acres. We're hearing a lot of guys talk about, I'm going to cut back on soybeans a little bit just with market conditions and that. Do you expect any big movement up in your area to one crop or another?
Well, that's kind of part of my question today is there's a real, you're probably aware we're quite heavy in canola.
Yep.
It's quite a flexible crop for us to grow on based on environment and produces a good return. But with this, the progress of clubroot across Western Canada, rotation has been the key talk in any meeting late. And I think there's going to be a shift to some more pulses in the rotation and thinking more along the lines of controlling this disease and possibly looking at going back to a more regenerative ag or a holistic approach. I think we've been pushing rotation so hard, people are starting to realize the impact it's having on our production.
Yeah, it's hard when you've got a crop that's easily the most profitable one. It's pretty hard not to go heavy on that, but like you say, eventually nature's going to find its way around whatever we're trying to do. So, you know, with the pulse crops, I mean, they've got some challenges too, of course, so it's not like you can grow pulse after pulse after pulse. So, you know, what do you think the rotation will look like?
I expect canola acres to be down slightly. I also expect oat acres to be down up in this country. And I found that wheat, barley, peas, and some of the specialty crops like flax and lentils to be up. And I expect a little bit more perennial work, too. Like, I know a lot of my clients, we've talked about alfalfa, clover.
Hey, Mark, we're up against a break here. Hang on just a second. I want to talk to you just a little bit more about that right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit iGrowLiquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free Grain Bridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Talking to Mark up in Saskatchewan just before the break and, you know, looking at canola and some of the challenges they've had when guys get a little heavy in the rotation on canola and looking for some different alternatives. You talked about perennials, Mark, and maybe putting in some more alfalfa and that kind of thing. I find it interesting when we go to those types of crops and all of a sudden you're locked into something for 3 or 4 years, it does tend to alleviate some problems out there.
It sure does. I think the hardest part is the marketing aspect side of growing those crops. It's the implementation of getting them in rotation isn't as difficult as you might think, right?
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, my question for you, if I were to take you off your farm and put you up in northeast Saskatchewan, how would you utilize...
Wait till summer to do that, Mark. Wait till summer to do that.
How would you utilize cover crops up here? Because it's the healthy soil movement... it's gaining more traction, much like the healthy soil movement down there in the States, right? And it's on everybody's radar that we got to be better stewards of the land. We can't just keep pushing the rotations hard.
You know, it's interesting, and we haven't gotten as heavy onto cover crops. We definitely use them after wheat, but wheat is not a huge amount of acres on our farm. And our corn this year... Wow, we had snowflakes flying as we're trying to get stuff out, and there just isn't time for us to plant cover crops after harvest. So the guys that are trying it in our area are trying to do something in crop, and I know there's some farmers that are going to wait till the corn's, a foot tall or bigger and try to get something established, but we've got such a thick crop canopy on our soybeans, and our corn gets pretty big and tall too. I don't know if we're going to be successful doing that, to be honest with you. So on our farm so far, we've been on the sidelines on a lot of that kind of work just because we've done a little bit, but not that much. Now, where you're at, you know, you're super dry right now. And a concern that we have on years that were super dry is moisture utilization of, well, are we going to, is it going to be worth it for us? You know, shading out the ground when it's warm, that's nice, but those plants are taking up moisture and using up moisture. Are we going to leave the ground in a drier condition at the end of that and then be regretting that decision later on? I don't know.
Yeah. So have you found that producers in those northern states have kind of been bitten in the end doing that in-crop, cover crop then?
I think the jury's still out. I think it's a little early in that, but I think over the next couple of years, there's starting to be more application technology to be able to seed it instead of just blow it on over the top or fly it over the top. We've got a couple of guys that call into the show every now and again that do fly on cover crop, and they'll say, man, there's 3 out of 4 years, it works really good. And 1 out of 4 years, it didn't work at all. And so it's not like it's perfect, but they can certainly help for guys that don't have equipment. I just wonder if there isn't going to be some seeding equipment that we'll be using down the road to get this done, if it pays.
Well, actually, at a trade show here last week, the company has a drone for seeding cover crops. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it sure can be. And, you know, the guys in my dad's generation say, oh, you know, this cover crop thing comes around every 20 or 30 years that guys get into it for a while and then it doesn't pay and they move on to something else. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to say. I guess I don't have that wide a vision of generations to be able to make that call. But I think it's something that some of the guys that are doing it are really liking it and really seeing some benefits. And with today's technology of tracking what yields are and performance and so forth, I think if guys are doing that and they say, yeah, it's making me money in the rotation, or it fits really well because I've got some livestock and I'm going to do some grazing. I've got an uncle that does that, and he said that's just been fantastic for their farm. Awesome. That's great. I don't think it's for everybody or every situation, but I think if we're smart and know where to do things, just like everything else in farming, I think we'll be successful.
Thanks for the input, Darren.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Mark, and stay warm this winter. Keep plugging through this bitter cold that we've got coming through again next week now, too. Speaking of cold, I can't think of any colder place than down in Louisiana. We got Cedric with us. Cedric, what is it down there? 70 degrees? Just hit me with it.
61, sir.
Yeah, that sounds pretty. And it's probably cool for you. And for me, that just sounds like, wow, I'm going to get the shorts out.
No, not really. We've been at a pretty rough winter so far. A lot of rain, no snow and ice and sub-zero temperatures like you guys, but it's been real wet.
Okay, so when that happens, what changes for you? You've got winter-seeded crops out there, or you've got pastures, or what is going to be the problem area out of this?
For my hay operation, Darren, trying to get in the field in the springtime to plant some new bahia or Bermuda grass seeds, that's going to be a very tedious job because you can't really wait until about April before the ground temperature gets, you know, warm enough for those seeds to germinate. So I have a certain area, a couple acres that I talked to you earlier in the spring about that I had that horse needle stuff I was trying to get rid of.
Yes.
And I've listened to you and I've watched you on TV, you and your brother Brian, and I did something that I think might come back and bite me.
Uh-oh.
But I dissed the whole field.
Okay.
Where that horse needle was. So I don't know if it spread it, because I remember you or Brian both telling me it could spread if they got those nematodes down in the root system. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens out of that. And then, of course, you get this year where it rains and rains. You can't get out there and get anything done. So kind of yeah. hope that turns out okay. Hey, what is the hay? What's the hay market down in your area? I was down in Arizona here a couple of weeks ago, and the guys there said the hay market is awesome right now.
Yeah, it was a shortage here in the South in Louisiana. I sold out, Darren. I think I sold my last 50 bales last weekend. And there's an app out there called HayMap app. I know you guys are probably familiar with it, but in Louisiana, due to the lot of rain we had during the summer, a lot of farmers and ranchers didn't have time or caught bad luck with the rain. So the average bale, 5x5 bales, were going for $45 here.
Wow. Yeah. So
there's a lot of work into it. I mean, you know, you got to make sure that your field is limed, sprayed for weeds, and it got good fertilization on it. It's not top quality hay, you know, you can't get $45-$50
a bale. Sure. Yep. Yeah, that's always the case. There's a premium market for premium stuff, and it's not easy. So you mentioned liming. How often do you guys have to lime in your geography? Is this something every few years you got to put a little more on with all the rain and the heat you get?
Well, because of the water table and the soil samples I sent to you and Brian, I'm thinking every 5 years I can get away with 2 tons an acre. If I get 3 cuts a year between May and this last cut I got was in October. That was unheard of, but I kind of beat around the weather, and I cut in October. That was the last cutting I had. And, you know, every three to five years we try to line.
Okay. Yeah, where my dad grew up in north central Iowa, it was kind of every 3 or 4 years there for a while, and guys are fine-tuning what they're doing on fertility and stuff, and they're able to extend that a little longer. But, yeah, we're in the case of we're hoping we're going to lime once and be done, but we'll see how good of managers we are. So far, we've over-limed a little bit in some areas, and we haven't quite got it right, so we're still learning, too.
Hey, let me ask you this. Earlier this year, I talked to you guys. Where do you send the lime samples to? If I got two different sources,
sure.
I should send those samples off to Midwest Laboratories?
That's what we do. We've been using Midwest, and they'll analyze the lime samples and then kind of give us an idea. Well, this one you'd need 2,000 pounds. This one you need 1,500. And then we could run the numbers and see which one's going to be more economical.
Okay. All right. I'll be doing that real soon then. Since I'm not in no snowbank.
You can come visit anytime, Cedric. We'd be happy to have some help scooping snow. No problem. No problem.
All right, sir.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. You bet. You too. Yeah, I love talking to guys in the South, especially this time of year, because they think, man, you guys got to be crazy living where you do. But then again, when it comes to be summertime, I sure like it here versus down South. So there's always a trade-off. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. You can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back after this.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply EndoPrime SC. MycoApply EndoPrime SC uses 4 specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply EndoPrime SC at EndoPrimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. It's Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Don on with us right now in Wisconsin. Don, how's it going today?
Going well. We were just wrapping up our corn soybean expo event here down at one of the resort towns in a rural area. So it was a very, very good show.
Excellent. You know, what's the vibe in Wisconsin? Is it staying with the rotation? Is it shifting acres towards one of those crops you just mentioned? What are guys talking?
Well, of course, part of this, if you're looking at just the business decision of whether, I'm sure a lot of the corn soybean guys are still kind of watching to find out what happens. This morning I see that the soybeans were up 10 cents, and I just thought I got a text message here by the end of the day they were down, up only a penny and a quarter. So it didn't look like maybe all the rallies held. Maybe there was a little bad news that came in there. But the other part that's impacting Wisconsin a lot is the dairy business. The dairy guys are, we're losing two farmers a day here in the state of Wisconsin. And so it's tough. And whether they're going to stay in business, whether they'll just get out of cows and go into crops, each one of them will have their own decision to make, but they're the ones that are struggling the hardest right now.
Yeah, that's not good. And when you think about Wisconsin, you just can't even imagine that if you're going to be a dairy farmer, that's not a great place to be. But, man, that industry is really struggling.
Our license plate, the land of the dairy land, right?
You know, when you think about that, what's going to happen with the dairies? I mean, are the cattle just leaving, or are other guys coming in and picking it up, or are they getting absorbed by big dairies? What's the trend?
I think that's more the case. Is the cow numbers are not actually dropping. We're just ending up having even the guys now hitting that 300 and 400 size herd are getting impacted, but cows are being absorbed by some of those bigger ones, whether they're actually buying them or bringing them in for someplace. But the cattle numbers are holding steady. And, of course, just the improvements in both genetics and dietary has just led to overproduction. And, until that market corrects itself, and, of course, that young guy, the smaller guy has a little bit harder labor crunch. He doesn't have as much hired labor there to spread it out, so he has to take that all on his own shoulders. And, sometimes it just becomes not only too much, but it doesn't become very appealing to the next generation. And if you're not doing it for somebody down the road, sometimes the incentive is, the desire to get up every morning just isn't there.
Yeah, and it's not like these guys don't have a tremendous work ethic. They do. It's
exactly
Unbelievable the amount of work that our dairy farmers do. I don't think about that when you grab a glass of milk or some cheese or whatever you're consuming, that how much work goes into that. But you're right. These small dairy farmers who are doing it pretty much themselves, that's wow. Oh, it's just such a commitment that I get it.
And,
if you don't
and
have somebody.
Not a break.
Yeah,
there's just not that break in there. And when you've got that many cows, you're always going to have something that's sick, or you're going to have something that you're nursing because you've got a case of mastitis or you've got something going on. So it's just never like going to go in and do those chores in an hour and a half or an hour and 45 minute time frame and be done for the night. You're spending probably just as much time back out there trying to take care of those those problem cases.
Hey, I want to shift gear just a little bit because you said you were just at the Corn Soybean Expo, and I know that in Wisconsin, especially southern Wisconsin, a lot of talk about tar spot this year, and certainly gray leaf spot was just nasty. Oh my goodness, I couldn't believe what you guys were fighting over there for gray leaf spot pressure in some of those areas. What's been the talk with that? Did you find some products that worked, or was it a timing thing that we didn't hit it just right with the fungicides?
That's an interesting question. I'm up in central Wisconsin, so I'm in the sandier soils. We didn't have it in the lighter ground, and we used some irrigation up there. So not having experienced it personally, but there was not a lot of discussion about the problem. So, and it wasn't that big of a topic of discussion. So I'm thinking that it's probably more of an issue that just a combination of weather factors caused that. It's kind of like white mold or something in soybeans.
Sure.
It's the opportunity for it to rear itself is always there. It's just the conditions are right, and you can't necessarily dictate what the weather is going to be. And I think it's just one of those situations where you realize you're in one of those unfortunate years, and you just endure it, and then have to figure if you're going to come back and plant another crop next year.
Yep. Well, hopefully that's the case, that it's not not an every year deal that we're dealing with now, but
you know,
anytime there's a new disease, it certainly gets everybody's attention in the media and makes everybody a little bit nervous.
Yeah. And of course there's an economic impact by that for sure. So there's people then who end up having to look at just a little like dollars, and there's a ripple effect, and they're going to be doing that as they go into the planting season. But you don't go in, I guess, you know, the farmers are so optimistic about things every year. They turn over a new leaf as if the world's and which is good. I mean, you don't get out of bed to do those kind of things if you don't have that attitude.
Yes.
And so they just look at the positive side of what's going to happen.
I think that's a great way to close it out, Don. Yeah, you got to be positive going into 2019 if you want to do this. I've been talking with Don up in Wisconsin. Thank you so much, Don. Really appreciate it, and good luck here going into the spring.
All right. You're quite welcome, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to chat with your listeners.
You bet. Thanks. I got Patrick up in Ontario right now. Patrick, how's it going up there?
It's going well, Darren. How are you?
Good. Now, I would assume you guys had a little bit of this cold blast come through as well. What's the attitude up in your area going into planting season for 2019? Is there
vomitoxin. That's about it. Everybody is, that's still the big talk up here. And, you know, I was going to actually plant all corn next year, but I've changed my mind on that. I actually am going to plant some soybeans just because I don't want to put all the risk into one crop.
Yeah. Yep. I can sure see that. I know I've got a friend, and they had an aflatoxin problem on their farm, and that kind of makes you shy away from putting too many eggs in that same basket, that's for sure. So what are you doing? I guess, what are they telling you going into next year for the vomitoxin to reduce your risk?
Well, it all depends on who you talk to. Some guys say, oh, it was this variety, and then the other people say it was a planting date, and then they're telling you, well, you know, spray a different fungicide, and there is no, seems like, real right or wrong answer with that topic. I really don't know what to say.
Yeah, that makes it a challenge when you don't have good data. I guess, you know, you think about this year, some of the things that happened. I was just talking with Don about tar spot that got up into Wisconsin. Did you have any tar spot that got over to Ontario?
No, I did not see any of that this year, but there has been write-ups and papers about it, and I guess that's going to be the next thing that we have to start watching for.
You know, in the United States, we're getting a lot of talk, of course, about the negotiations with China and soybeans and what's going on there, and that's impacting the market here for sure. And we're hearing some guys talk about a little more corn here. Is that what you were kind of saying, too, that you thought the opportunity profit-wise was there on corn?
Oh, definitely, for sure. Typically, up here on our lighter sand soils, the corn-on-corn method seems to be best, but you know, like I said, it goes back to the vomitoxin thing, and I don't know.
time will tell.
Yeah, yeah, that's the tough thing. You don't always know what kind of year we're going to get, and the weather is certainly going to be different. We just don't know exactly how going into it to plan for it.
No, well, just like the previous caller from Wisconsin said, same thing. So.
Yep. Yeah. So you end up spreading your risk with several different hybrids, several different maturities, and like you say, rotating in a rotational crop, exactly. Even if it's not going to be the most profitable thing for you, just to at least play it safe. Well, hey, Patrick, we appreciate the call, and good luck here going into this next spring.
You too. Thanks, Darren.
You bet. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPHD Media, or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrien herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It's Farmer Friday, and that means we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Hope you've enjoyed some of the questions and some of the calls. Even talked to Cedric down in Louisiana. He said it's only 61 degrees down there, which after coming through about 60 below wind chill here a couple days back, that sounds pretty good to me. Got a question here, or I should say a comment from Mark out in Maryland. And Mark said, just wanted to give you a rundown on how our year went in 2018. I caught your show earlier this year. You were talking about what people thought of 2018 and how things went. And just wanted to give you an update from the Delmarva. Well, thanks, Mark. Appreciate hearing from you. Mark said, well, 2018 got off to a phenomenal start. They got in the fields early, and then on Mother's Day weekend, it started to fall apart, and the rains came and came and came. And yeah, Mark, we heard that from quite a few guys this year around the country. So Mark says, by barley and wheat harvest time in June, fields had ponds in them, and combines made tracks from end to end as they tried to harvest the crop. Double crop soybeans were just mucked into the mud, and even then, some fields were being replanted the first or second time. But by early July, the rain stopped. Then it got hot and dry, unfortunately, right about the time the corn was tasseling. This pattern continued all through the fall, plagued us throughout harvest and wheat planting of being wet. Today, there's still some unharvested fields of really decent-looking soybeans, but you can't even walk across some of the fields. It's been so wet. However, I will have to say the shining thing from this year was crop insurance. The crop insurance worked really well. A lot of farmers who will farm again in 2019 because they had good crop insurance, and that saved their farms. Hey, Mark, thanks for the heads up. We really appreciate hearing what's going on. It's so often in farming you get used to, well, I'm looking at my farm and looking at my area, but it's really good to hear what's happening around the country, and I think it's our listeners really appreciate that too. We were talking with Don earlier today too, just talking about the tough situation dairy farmers are in Wisconsin and around the country, and man, we sure feel for all the guys that are struggling this year. It's definitely not an easy season, that's for sure. Got Keith with us right now. Keith's got an email. He said, I'm in central Indiana. I'm raising primarily corn and soybeans. Now, in our area, we've got low to moderate sulfur levels and moderate to high levels of magnesium and pH levels in the 6 to 6.5 range. What are your thoughts about using ammonium sulfate as a primary nitrogen source versus using something like anhydrous or UAN? All right, Keith. Well, a few things here. First of all, you need the sulfur. And ammonium sulfate's a great way to do that. We've got a lot of growers that we talk to that are putting on 100 to 200 pounds of ammonium sulfate as a portion of their nitrogen recommendation. And what we're seeing happen is more growers are trying to find different sources of nitrogen to kind of spoon feed that crop throughout the season. So maybe you start off with a couple hundred pounds of ammonium sulfate. It's only a 21-0024, so a couple hundred pounds would give you 48 pounds of your sulfur and 40 pounds roughly of ammonium nitrogen. That's a good start. And maybe you need 200 pounds of nitrogen total, and you can put the other pounds on through a different way, and you've met your sulfur needs. Your pH in the 6 to 6.5 range is about ideal for corn and soybean production. I don't want to change that. We've had a few situations where we've put on hundreds of pounds of ammonium sulfate per acre, like 500 to even 1,000 in small plots. And what we found is we lower our soil pH when we start putting on dramatically more ammonium sulfate than we need. So I don't think I would put it on as your total source. Where, like, say, for example, you needed 200 pounds of nitrogen, and you said, well, I'm just going to put 1,000 pounds of ammonium sulfate out there. I do think you're going to drive your pH down a little bit, and it's way more sulfur than you're going to need, and it could start impacting some other things in your base saturation, like your magnesium or your calcium. So I would not be necessarily in favor of that, but I don't see your whole soil test either, so maybe there's something I don't know. In terms of moderate to high levels of magnesium, if that's your purpose of, hey, I want to get more sulfur out to try and get rid of some of that mag, you sure could, but it doesn't seem like you'd be super high in mag when your pH is down in the 6 to 6.5 range. It seems like maybe you're in the upper teens would be my guess, but I guess you can let me know if it's different than that. So the ammonium sulfate, I like it. I love having nitrogen in the ammonium form. I love getting sulfur out there because, like you said, you're low to moderate on sulfur. I would say almost every soil test, Brian, I look at, unless there's a drainage problem and sulfur can't get away, we're looking at low sulfur levels just across the Corn Belt. It's dramatic. And where we're adding sulfur in corn and in soybeans, that's been a real positive. So you may even consider using ammonium sulfate or some different sulfur source to add some more sulfur in your soybean rotation as well. Hey, thanks a lot. Really appreciate the question. Got a question here from Steven in Northeast Ohio. He said, we're farming about 1,300 acres on various soil types, mostly no-till or minimum till. And I'm about to get a new planting tractor. Currently, I'm using a 12-row, 30-inch planter and a 30-foot air seeder with 10-inch rows on beans. The tractor is at a good price in my budget, but it's set up with large rubber. What would be your recommendation? Do you like big, wide tires? Do you like that footprint? Do you think I should try to set it up to straddle the row or plant dead center on the tire? After reading some articles, I thought this may be an option. The tractor is at such a low price, I could probably afford to switch it to a normal row crop setting and get rid of the big tires. I'm a young farmer trying to save some money, but want to do the right thing here too. Hey, thanks, Stephen. Really appreciate that. I don't like driving over stuff, so I mean, I would certainly switch tires up to make sure you're set up in a row crop situation. Compaction is going to be one of the biggest things that you fight. What we've heard from a lot of growers across the country that have done row by row yields, and I would say this, we had a 2-row combine and we were looking at 2 rows at a time yields. When we got right around where those tractor tires were, our yields went down significantly. And when we got further away from where tires were running, our yields went up big time. So I would be real cautious about that. I like to spread the weight out as much as I can. I mean, the idea of big tires is nice for preseason work or fall work or that kind of thing, as long as it's not super wet out there. But in season, I'd rather be set up with a row crop kind of setting to try to avoid those issues. Hey, thanks a lot, Stephen. Really appreciate it. And don't be afraid to send in more questions. We'd love to hear them. Got a comment from Smart Agro here. He said, hey, wonderful information on your corn planting depth. Wondering what's the reason for, he says, pencil or runt plants. So really thin stalk, small plants. Why do we see the difference? Well, what we're seeing a lot of times is we're getting a difference in emergence timing, where we'll get plants that pop up, and then right in between those plants that are now getting big, there's a plant that pops up a couple days later, and they just never catch up. So it could be that you've got planting depth that's not consistent. It could be something with how that seed is placed, and you're just not getting the closing system working efficiently. I would take a look at what's going on with that planter and try to make that consistent. One of the biggest things that we've been doing on our farm and trying to work on is trying to get plant-to-plant consistency. So getting our spacing just right and getting our depth just right, that's going to be really huge. So whenever you see those plants that aren't as big as the others, you can take them all the way to yield, and you'll see that they just aren't going to put on the ear that those plants that came up first are going to put on. So I'd be right after working on that planter as soon as you can. Hey, thanks for the question. We really appreciate that. All right. Got a question from Ed. He said, do you know any programs like Ag PhD that are on RFD TV or elsewhere aimed at growing flowers on a commercial basis? Hey, Ed, that's an interesting topic. Brian and I have gotten a chance over the years to visit some growers of flowers, and it's just neat seeing what they're doing, how they're doing things different versus what we're doing producing corn and soybeans and wheat. Unfortunately, I don't know of any programs, like television programs, specifically around the agronomics of growing flowers. So I don't know where to turn to help you with that. Sorry about that, but we do appreciate the question, and thanks for checking out our show as well. I love Farmer Friday. Get to talk to people from all over the country. Today as far north as Ontario and Saskatchewan, and as far south as Louisiana, all the way to the East Coast. Pretty fun day. If you've got questions for us, please send them in, radio@agphd.com. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can next week. Thanks for listening to our show. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.